This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
In this edition today, our bulletin of church news that will be followed by panorama and then our feature of justice and peace. Today we shall close with our sports roundup. My name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. Pope Francis has urged Costa Ricans to bring the gospel to all during the country's special jubilee year. The Pope's appeal is contained in a letter he has sent to the Catholic Church in Costa Rica as the faithful begin a jubilee year that will lead up to the 100th anniversary of the Central American Nations dioceses. The Pope's message coincided with the inauguration of the jubilee year by the Costa Rican Church on Sunday. The year-long spiritual experience is intended to help the faithful prepare for the centenary of the country's ecclesiastical province to be marked on 16th February 2021. Sent on Sunday and signed by the Secretary of State, Cardinal Pietro Parolin, the letter conveys Pope Francis' spiritual closeness to Costa Rican Catholics during this special year. The Pope encourages them to recall the merciful love of our Lord Jesus Christ, from whom all truth, goodness, and beauty flows. All lay people, priests, and consecrated religious, he says, should strive untiringly to continue his work of evangelization, sharing with all the joy of the gospel, especially those most in need. He urges Catholics to give true Christian witness within the various aspects of society. Pope Benedict XV created the dioceses of San Jose, Limone, and Alajuela with the papal bull Predecessorum in 1921. Jubilee celebrations will be held in those three historical dioceses out of the eight that currently make up the ecclesiastical province. The Vatican on Monday announced that Pope Francis has introduced a year of missionary experience during the training of those preparing to join and serve in the Holy See Diplomatic Corps. In a letter to the president of the Pontifical Ecclesiastical Academy, the Holy Father said that candidates to the Vatican's diplomatic service will be asked to have 12 months working in a local diocese anywhere in the world. The Pontifical Ecclesiastical Academy is a Holy See higher institution of learning that trains nuncios or ambassadors and diplomatic members of staff for the Vatican. Archbishop Joseph Marino is the new president of this Pontifical Ecclesiastical Academy, following the publication of the papal directives on the formation of the Holy See diplomats. Archbishop Marino spoke to Vatican Radio, explaining that a missionary experience is one of conversion.
On Saturday, 1st of February, I was received by the Holy Father in audience, and during that encounter, he told me that he had already decided to make the missionary experience a part of the formation that takes place in the academia. At that time, and as he says in his letter, Pope Francis made it very clear that the formation here is fundamentally a priestly and pastoral formation, and by extension, it must include a missionary experience and formation. And when we look at the entire pontificate of Pope Francis since he was elected Pope, he has repeated many times that he dreams of a missionary church, an outgoing church. I think all we have to do is go back and look at Evangelium Gaudium. And since this is the vision of the church that Pope Francis has, certainly we, his representatives, must have the same spirit and the same vision. And this vision does have a transforming effect on us all, because it requires of us a true conversion of going outside of ourselves, outside of our own interests, and moves us to embrace those churches and even countries who are most in need of the.
The Kenya Conference of Catholic Bishops is dedicating the 2020 season of Lent to the anti-corruption campaign which they launched on October 5th, 2019. The theme of the Lenten period, which this year begins on February 26th, is Stewardship for a Transformed Nation, My Obligation. In a preface to the 2020 Lenten campaign too, the chairman of the Catholic Justice and Peace Commission of the Kenya Conference of Catholic Bishops, Monsignor John Obala Owa, says that this year's Lenten campaign should address how the church as an institution and all its members can continue the fight against corruption. Bishop Obala, who is also the ordinary of Ngong Diocese, argues that stewardship could spur Kenya to greater heights. Unidentified armed individuals on Sunday, 16th February, attacked an evangelical church in the village of Pansi in northern Burkina Faso. The attack left at least 24 people dead, while 10 others have been injured. The incident took place on Sunday morning when the faithful were gathered in the church for prayers. Witnesses say that the assailants were on motorbikes and opened fire on the faithful before fleeing with the pastor and other hostages. You are tuned to the Daily Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
Negotiators of the government of South Sudan and representatives of rebels loyal to Riek Machar met in the capital Juba on Tuesday to discuss the details for a joint transitional government, which they intend to announce this coming Saturday, February 22nd. Discussions focused on security arrangements and the sharing of power. Rebel leader Riek Machar arrived in South Sudan on Monday for talks with President Salva Kiir. The two sides are under pressure from the African Union, the United Nations, and from the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, IGAD, to meet the deadline, which is February 22nd. The United Nations has condemned the killing of 22 people in Cameroon's Northwest English-speaking region. The killings took place last Friday. According to the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, the victims died in the village of Ntumbo and included a pregnant woman and 14 children. The Cameroonian army denied at the weekend that its troops were responsible for the killings, but now it has admitted that the victims were unintended and unfortunate casualties of a gunfight with the separatist rebels of the Ambazonia movement. The conflict in the English-speaking parts of Cameroon has killed many people and displaced more than 700,000 within the country, while 50,000 have crossed to neighboring Nigeria. As you heard on this program, the International Organization for Migration has again warned of the dangers of crossing the Red Sea to Yemen. The warning comes after more than 11,000 migrants from the Horn of Africa arrived in Yemen this month. The migration agency says Yemen is a country at war and therefore very unsafe for migrants. Daniel Johnson reports.
The data from UN Migration Agency IOM shows that the Red Sea crossing was busier in 2019 than the Mediterranean Sea route used to get to Europe for the second year in a row. The dangers for those who embark on the journey have been well documented. IOM spokesperson Paul Dillon said that more than 9 in 10 of those travelling to Yemen are from rural Ethiopian regions, and almost all want to go to Saudi Arabia.
Not only has the migration along on the eastern route not been reduced by years of conflict in Yemen, migrants appear undeterred by the Gulf's strict immigration policies for undocumented migrants. And a quote here from a young man: "To get to Yemen, they crammed about 280 of us onto one boat. There was no oxygen, and some of the people committed suicide by throwing themselves into the sea."
Once the migrants arrive in Yemen, where most are unaware of the fighting, others face being held hostage for ransom by people smugglers. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
And lastly, a court of law in Kenya has upheld the decision to sack an airport guard who insisted that the Minister of Education queue for a security check at Jomo Kenyatta International Airport in 2017. Airport authorities sacked the guard on grounds that he had committed a gross misconduct. The court said the sacking was lawful. You are tuned to the English Africa service of Vatican Radio. And now, our feature, Justice and Peace. The African Union has launched a campaign known as Silencing the Guns in Africa by 2020. The idea was proposed in 2013, and since then the African Union administration has been touring African countries to gather views on how to implement it. The campaign aims to achieve a conflict-free Africa, prevent genocide, make peace a reality for all, and rid the continent of wars, violent conflicts, human rights violations, and humanitarian disasters. Naledi Pandor is South Africa's Minister for International Relations. She explains how the proposal came about.
During the meeting of the Executive Council of the African Union, ministers of foreign affairs and representatives discussed the theme of silencing the guns, which has been put forward by South Africa in order to create a conducive environment for Africa's development. And everyone welcomed the theme because they all agreed the time has come for us to find peace on the continent, to end all conflicts, because conflicts do not assist us to pursue the key objectives of the African Union and of the people of Africa.
The campaign targets member states of the African Union because they have the primary responsibility of providing peace and security and the overall protection of citizens. Currently, there are about 17 conflicts taking place on the African continent. The conflict-ridden countries include Burkina Faso, Mali, Niger, Nigeria, Chad, the Central African Republic, Ethiopia, Eritrea, Somalia, Sudan, South Sudan, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Burundi, and Libya. Dr. Nkosazana Zuma is the former chairperson of the African Union Commission. She explains the nature of conflicts on the African continent.
The conflicts that we have today, most of them are internal. We are not seeing any conflict in Africa where one country is fighting another. The problems are internal. And of course, there are issues around extremism and terrorism. So we need to look at the root causes of these conflicts and address them. Because if you think you can have peace and security only by deploying soldiers, it's not enough. Because to sustain peace and to have peace, you must also have development. Development is a prerequisite for peace. People who are hungry, people who are homeless, one day they'll rise. And so it's important to look at the two and make sure that they go hand in hand.
Africa is one of the continents in the world with the highest number of illegally acquired weapons. A research study carried out in 2017 revealed that over 40 million small arms and light weapons in Africa are in the hands of civilians, rebel movements, and militias, while government institutions own about 11 million. Most of these weapons are used to commit crime, to perpetuate violence in rural communities and urban areas, and in cattle rustling. The most used gun on the continent is the AK-47. The weapons are imported and others are smuggled into countries. The top arms suppliers to Africa are Russia, China, Ukraine, Germany, and France, while the largest recipients are Egypt, Algeria, Morocco, and the Democratic Republic of Congo. According to reports, 22 African countries manufacture various kinds of small arms and light weapons. There are also some homemade weapons being produced on the continent by local individuals, which play a role in fueling criminality. One of the main concerns of the African Union are the substantial number of weapons coming out of the conflict-ridden Libya. These weapons were previously owned by the regime of the seized Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi and now have ended up in the hands of Islamic militants who were destabilizing northern Mali and other countries in the Sahel region.
You have intrastate and interstate conflict. These are just militating against what we would like to achieve. The Libyan focus is an important one. We are determined that Africa should take a lead in addressing the challenges.
While it is easier to monitor guns and other weapons imported by governments and control their use, it is difficult to monitor and control smuggled weapons. Long-sighted African leaders agree that conflict remains one of the biggest challenges facing Africa, and the African Union sees conflict as one of the biggest impediments to development on the continent. Cyril Ramaphosa is the president of South Africa and the current chairman of the African Union.
The AU decided years ago that 2020 must be the year of silence in the guns. Now, there are a number of conflicts that are still ongoing on the continent, and we are going to be working together with all countries to see how best we can bring peace to descend on many parts of our continent.
One of the questions being asked is how will the guns be silenced on the African continent? Experts on conflict resolution believe that disarming alone is not enough. There is a need for initiatives aimed at reconciliation and peace building. In addition, it is absolutely important to address the root causes of conflicts on the continent. To build peace, African countries need to create inclusive multi-sectoral programs that will address the economic, social, and environmental causes of the problem. For example, there are about 600 million young people in Africa who are unemployed, uneducated, or in insecure employment. This requires investment in economic development in order to stop youth from taking up arms. One of the challenges the campaign will face is its dissemination by member states. Political will by heads of state and government is necessary for the success of the campaign. Another challenge is related to mobilizing financial resources to support the campaign. Many African governments seem to be willing to back the campaign, but lack the money to finance it. The United Nations, the European Union, and many international and national organizations have pledged support, but want African governments to play their role too. In addition to Libya, the conflict in South Sudan is one of the concerns of the African Union. Besides killing tens of thousands of civilians, it has displaced more than 4 million others, with some crossing into neighboring countries. Yet the men who are behind it continue to disagree. Dr. Nkosazana Zuma explains the causes of that conflict.
South Sudan is a very young country. There were no strong political institutions. Secondly, there were no strong government institutions. A dispute that was taking place within a party degenerated into war. But also, it's about resources as well, the control of resources. It's about children going to school, it's about health services, it's about infrastructure. Of course, if everybody feels that they are included and that the resources of the country are being used for the benefit of the people, then people will be more tolerant. The institutions are very important. They need to build strong institutions because there'll always be disagreements. There'll always be shocks in a country, but you need institutions that can absorb those shocks, that can deal with those disagreements without those disagreements degenerating into war.
That was Dr. Nkosazana Zuma, the former chairperson of the African Union Commission. And that was Justice and Peace for this week. This has been John Baptist Tumusime.
children are crying from fear and hunger. Give them the peace and love they deserve. The peasants toil from sunup to sundown. You ignore their demands, destroying their trust. Their voices cry out from the wildness. We are crying out to the leaders of Africa.
This is a sports roundup and welcome to the program. My name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. Malian forward Musa Marega has received support from major stakeholders and the online community after he walked off the pitch in order to protest racism during a league match in Portugal. The FC Porto forward left the pitch during their game against Vitorio Guimarães on Sunday after he was subjected to racist chants from the home fans. The Malian battled past his teammates who were pleading with him to stay on, and play was halted for over 3 minutes before he left the pitch. Marega had scored what turned out to be Porto's winner for a 2-1 result moments before that incident, and celebrated by running towards a section of home fans and pointing towards his forearm. He later blasted as idiots the fans who reportedly jeered him, while also sarcastically thanking the referee for how he handled the situation. "We are a family regardless of nationality, skin color and hair color. We are human. We deserve respect. What happened here is unfortunate," Porto head coach Sergio Conceição said after the game. Former Real Madrid and Spain's keeper Ike Casillas, who now plays for Porto, also offered support to Marega via Twitter. A statement from Porto also said they fully support Marega's actions and called for a strong penalty against Guimarães. The Portuguese league body also explained that the acts shame football and human dignity. Draws for the CAN 2020 finals took place on Monday in the Cameroonian capital, Yaounde. Zimbabwe's Warriors will play host Cameroon in the opening match of the CAN 2020 finals on April 4th. After they were drawn in Group A, Zimbabwe, who are returning to the competition after missing the previous edition in 2018, were picked from the hat first at Monday's draw conducted by Cameroon legends Solomon Olembe and Steven Tatto at the Palais Polyvalente des Sports de Yaounde Hotel. The other teams in Group A are Burkina Faso and 2016 finalists Mali, the 2016 champions Democratic Republic of Congo, who are the tournament's most successful team after winning two of the previous five editions, headline Group B, which also has neighbors Congo-Brazzaville, Niger, and 2014 winners Libya. Defending champions Morocco are in Group C, along with Uganda, debutants Togo and Rwanda. Group D has Tanzania, Namibia, Guinea, and Zambia. CAN is reserved exclusively for players featuring in their home leagues. The finals of the tournament will be held from April 4 to 25th in the cities of Yaounde, Douala and Limbe. Zimbabwe are going to the CAN finals for the fifth time. They have the most appearances at the finals of the tournament, along with Uganda. But the Warriors' best performance was a fourth-place finish in South Africa in 2014. The Zimbabweans only missed the previous edition held in Morocco after they were stunned by Namibia in a two-legged qualifier. The Confederation of African Football, CAF, is in disarray, according to an expert audit. The investigation into the Confederation of African Football questioned the body's accounting, its governance, and its payments. PricewaterhouseCoopers carried out the audit. Amongst other details, the audit found out that CAF's accounting was unreliable and not trustworthy. Some 35 of 40 large payments, totaling $8.3 million, were unusual or had little or no supporting documentation. The Confederation of African Football is understaffed, with an overworked and demotivated workforce. The Confederation of African Football's presidential office was directly involved in the controversial decision to employ Tactical Steel, which is a little-known gym equipment manufacturer, to become a key supplier of sportswear. The forensic audit, which was complicated by Confederation of African Football's tendency to make most of its payments in cash, also suggested considerable reforms were needed throughout the Confederation of African Football. The confidential audit was carried out as part of the unprecedented decision to send the Secretary General of FIFA to improve the way that Confederation of African Football is run. Concluding her six-month role in early February, FIFA Secretary General Fatima Samura presented her findings to leading figures in the Confederation of African Football Administration, who have said they will address the recommendations laid out by a joint FIFA Confederation of African Football Task Force. And on that note, we come to the end of today's edition of our Sports Roundup. Until next week at the same time, my name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. This is the Africa Service of Vatican Radio. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.